Hello and welcome to Disrupting the Degree, the education marketing podcast. I'm Stephen Cleary from Carnival Content with
Zeynep Fayez
and Zeynep Fayez from the Brand Education.
This podcast is all about higher education with industry trends, experts and practical ideas across the student experience, brand and marketing.
In this episode of Disrupting the Degree, we're joined by Cameron Mirza, an expert in international education reform within the UK and Middle East. We'll be discussing digital transformation, disruptive technology and funding models.
Hello, Cameron. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Real pleasure, Stephen. Thanks for inviting me.
Where in the world are you at the moment?
I'm sitting in my hotel room in Amman, in Jordan, where I've been now for just over, coming up to 2 weeks. I'm currently in quarantine due to national lockdown this weekend. Recording this with you guys is perfect timing because I've got nothing else to do.
The highlight of your day is talking to us.
Yeah.
So how long do you say the lockdown was going on for?
Until it started on Thursday night till Sunday morning. So I've still got a whole of tomorrow to get through.
And as you said, you're stuck in your hotel room.
With us, yeah, virtually.
I suppose it's good talking about digital transformation for this one.
First world problems of today, aren't they?
Well, kind of global problems in some ways, but yes. Yeah. Right. So first question then. So we really enjoyed your Forbes article. So that's why we got in contact to get you on the podcast. So in your interview with Forbes, you talk about the pandemic causing digitalization in higher education, not digital transformation. Can you tell us a bit more about this and the difference between the two?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think when I talk about digitalization and digital transformation, it's worth looking at, I tend to look at other sectors. So government, financial services, healthcare, for example. And I look at the progress that they've made in terms of how they've used technology, not just in terms of the customer experience, but in just in terms of how they've pushed the frontiers of their sector. So yes. 5 years ago, we weren't talking about things like fintech. People weren't really using apps. They weren't really using technology to transfer money around the world. It was all fairly basic. But what we've seen is medicine's a great example of using AI to really take a lot of time out of patient diagnosis and telehealth, telemedicine. So these sectors have really progressed using frontier technologies. And I look at education, and I think. Technology has been really hard to penetrate education systems around the world. And what I mean by digitalization versus digital transformation, we've seen certain sectors absolutely transform through technology. Amazon, if you look at Amazon in terms of how they've used it and how digital platforms such as Facebook and Instagram, these are absolutely transformative business models. And if we look at education, we're doing somersaults and jumping through hoops because we're using Zoom to teach. By simply putting a PowerPoint presentation into turning it into a PDF and sending it out to students is not digital transformation. That is really digitalization. We're taking bits of paper and we're PDFing them and sending them out, and that's where we're at really. And if we look at the fundamental experience of young people around the world, it's really not that much different to what it was 30, 40, 50 years ago. Whereas if I do the comparative analysis against other sectors, they've absolutely transformed themselves by using technology. From the simple things in terms of navigating online, using apps, the customer experience, the use of data, that's how far education is behind. And that's the point I made in the article, in that we should really just slow down a bit when we're talking about digital transformation, because there are very few examples in higher education of where we can see the real benefits of any sort of digital transformation at this point in time, Stephen.
It's interesting that you talk about fintech, actually, and how Yes, I love banking through my mobile apps. Yeah. I can't imagine doing it a different way. The idea of actually going into the bank now to talk to someone about transferring some money just seems so slow in comparison to how we just do it using our phones.
Yeah.
And the fact that lots of banks are closing their physical premises as well.
So even when I started the brand education, I decided to go with a bank that was already in that space, like Starling Bank. Not many people.
Yes, same with me.
Yeah, and I didn't even have to physically go to the bank. I was approved. But when I went through NatWest, there were so many different hurdles. Like, they asked so many questions. And I think in comparison, it was just such a simple process.
It's just easier, isn't it? It's just a better experience.
It really is. Just on that, I mean, I often look at universities' websites and I think, okay, if I'm a student wanting to pay my fees, there are so many universities out there at the moment where you still can't pay online. You have to physically go in and pay your fees. And I can't think of a single university today that is accepting payment through Bitcoin. So, you know, I mean, we are where we are today. We've got a long way to go. But the journey started. But I think in comparison to other industries and other sectors, we are significantly behind in terms of digital transformation.
So how do you think then AI will transform education? Like, what are your kind of predictions or thinking process behind that?
I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about AI at this moment in time. When I talk to colleagues in universities and academics, and I use the word AI, I mean, I can see their eyes rolling over.
they just start hearing Elon Musk saying it's the end of the world.
I think so. And I think a lot of that just comes from a lack of understanding about AI. And I mean, look.
Definitely.
I think, first of all, AI is fed by data, and universities have got absolutely, you know, unbelievable opportunities to collect and use data. There's so many touch points in terms of a student experience, not just in terms of academic, but outside of the classroom. And I think, first of all, universities should think about their models for collecting and using data to enhance the student experience. And then from a purely academic perspective, in terms of helping faculty, there's absolutely no doubt AI has huge potential to do a lot of the heavy lifting that faculty face today. One of the greatest pressures that teachers have in higher education is simply workload and time.
Mm-hmm.
And AI has a great opportunity to reduce the workload and time by doing a lot of the heavy lifting that teachers are doing today in terms of assessment, in terms of marking. And for me, the greatest opportunity is in terms of personalization of learning for students as well. And that is, again, driven by data and machine learning and AI. And I think that if we really are serious about creating personalized learning opportunities for students, then we really need to grasp AI and look at its opportunities. And the problem is that universities are legacy industries. It's a legacy sector. And what it tends to do is build on top of existing platforms rather than reimagine and start from scratch. And I actually think when I talk about reimagining higher education, what we should do is stop building on legacy systems, legacy platforms, and think about the possibilities rather than constraints. I think that's a great shift required in terms of mindset and culture in higher education.
It's probably quite scary for them to think about that as well.
I think so, because we talk about digital transformation, but at the heart of it is people, staff and students. And I think we really do need to focus on culture and shifting that culture and bringing people along with us on that journey. And it does come from helping people to understand, particularly teachers, helping understand the benefits. And I think we've got a long way to go. But certainly I see, you know, over the next 10 years, data and AI being absolutely core to a lot of, particularly online universities. I think this will be core to their business model as we move forward.
Do you find, you know, there's usually a taboo around AI and, you know, it might be the case that the perception is quite negatively received by, you know, staff, because it might be, oh, you know, AI might replace jobs or people power.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a fear generally around what technology might do, but I think that's misplaced. I think if we look at any learner, I mean, I looked at the Pearson Global Learner Survey recently, And despite where we are in the world today, with 90% of students having to learn in a distant learning setting, the reality is that students want the face-to-face interaction. They want to be able. They want to be able to talk to faculty face-to-face. They want to be able to build those communities, which can only happen from an on-campus presence. So I think the fear is misplaced, and it comes from a lack of understanding. And AI, if you look at the world of healthcare, AI is transforming healthcare. If you talk to any doctor or practitioner, they will tell you what AI is doing is helping them do their job better.
Yeah.
Not replacing their job.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we've got to shift the mindset and talk about it in a different setting, in a different light, and actually accentuate the positives and look at the possibilities. Because I think that higher education, typically, if you talk about technology, the default setting is talk about constraints. We can't do it because of this. We can't do it because of that. Actually, we need to reframe it and talk about the possibilities. What can we do? What is possible?
Mm-hmm.
And again, that comes down to culture. It also comes down to leadership. And I think it does come down to engaging staff. Too many universities make decisions top down. They don't engage their people, their faculty in decision making, in the thought process. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done to get there. But I'm still optimistic that this has to be the way we need to move.
Yeah, great point. And so can you just give us an overview of your career so far?
Sure. So I spent between 2004 and 2011, I spent most of that working in the Department for Education and Home Office. So I was really lucky to work on some great projects then. So I worked on the Respect Programme, the Blair Initiative about antisocial behaviour. There was family intervention projects, you know, supporting young people at risk in the UK, the review of diversity and inclusion in the curriculum with Sakifa Jegbo. And I think probably the thing I was most proud about was the development and launch of the Young Apprenticeship Programme, which brought in vocational learning for 14 to 16-year-olds at school. So they would do 3 days a week in the classroom doing their GCSE, and 2 days a week with an employer working towards a vocational diploma. So I was really lucky enough to be involved with some great programs during that time. And then at the end of 2011, I had an opportunity to move to Bahrain to help them restructure their higher education sector. So I moved to the ministry there at the end of 2011 and did 4.5 years there, really bringing in fairly, I would say, basic policy measures around accreditation, around quality assurance, and actually launched the first ever national strategy for higher education research for the country.
Oh wow!
So a lot.
That's quite an achievement.
I think it was just about setting a direction of travel for the country in terms of what it could achieve for its higher education sector, and actually putting for me what was important was putting the students at the heart of that process, rather than it being an afterthought, and also getting universities to think a bit broader than just teaching and learning, to think about things like entrepreneurship and research.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of groundbreaking for the country, and
really rewarding for yourself as well.
I think so, Stephen. Yeah, and I think as a result of that work, my boss was made president of the university, the National University of Bahrain, and I went with him, and then.
Amazing.
So I wrote in 2016 the transformation plan for the university, which set out the agenda for the next 5 years in terms of how we were going to operate. And digital was a key component of that strategy. How could we use technology better to enhance the student experience and to actually improve how we managed the organization? Yeah, so that was, you know, for me, quite rewarding to see the change and improvements. I mean, for me, the benefit of that was always about the student outcome. So over the next 4 years, you know, we managed to improve student employability. We reduced the time it took for students to graduate. Our research output increased by 300% in 4 years.
Wow.
And we got to do some amazing things. So, you know, just off the top of my head, we managed to create a joint program in cloud computing with Amazon Web Services. Amazon actually have built an innovation center on the campus, which is great. And it's focused on working with society to solve real problems in a community. So it's about social innovation, which is fantastic. And I brought in one of the complaints that students always used to say to me was it took forever to get their certificates and degrees attested. And I thought that was really poor for mm-hmm. a university. So as a result, we implemented blockchain to issue certificates to students. So instead of taking them 4 weeks to get their certificates validated and approved, we could do it literally in seconds.
Oh, wow.
So,
the perfect use of technology, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. And I think, again, it comes back to the mindset around digital transformation. It's about using technology to solve the real problems rather than finding a problem to fit the technology, which I see too much of.
Do you think they get scared away from it being seen as expensive, like the idea of blockchain? What is this new technology? And surely that must be really expensive to do.
Yeah, I think you're right, Stephen. Actually, it's not expensive at all. It's actually really, cost effective. Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think it's about a lack of understanding. I mean, I'm a great believer in looking at other industries and seeing the role that technology's played in those industries and thinking, what can we use in terms of education, in terms of our customers who are the students? How can we use that technology to solve some of the pain that they go through and to make their experience better than today? So I think it's a mindset thing.
Yeah, definitely. Brings us perfectly to the next question, is what opportunities do you think the pandemic has given higher education?
I think that's a really interesting question in terms of, in many ways, the future of education based on the pandemic. I don't think we can go back to the old model,
no.
Even, because to be honest, the old model wasn't working, if we're being frank about it. I mean, if you're lucky enough or you've got the resources to go to a top university, that kind of elite brand university will always set you up in life, really. But we have to remember that the vast majority of students in higher education don't come from a privileged background, often having to work a job to get themselves through university, and see it as a way of getting themselves into employment after graduation. And I think we've got to use this pandemic as an opportunity to think about how can we better serve students, how can we better serve society, and what does our R&D look like post pandemic. And I think there's a lot of opportunities to really transform the models of delivery going forward to be more inclusive, and also just to reduce the carbon footprint of universities. So do we really need to travel to conferences overseas? Can we, we can use technology now as well to become far more sustainable in our approach to doing business.
Definitely.
So there's a lot of positives, but the reality is that young people still want to be on campus and to interact with their peers and to have some face-to-face. I suspect it'll end up being more of a blended model whereby we'll have a real balance between off-site and on-campus learning, synchronous and asynchronous learning. And I suspect that this hybrid delivery model is going to be the future, where we'll have a plethora of lectures recorded. So we'll have the kind of on-demand learning for students to manage their own learning at their own speed, which is important,
mm-hmm.
but then have the opportunity, whether that be on a weekly basis or on a semester basis, to come on campus and spend time with faculty and just use that time perhaps more effectively than before. I think the challenges are going to be around labs, where students have got to get the practical lab experience. That's challenging. But, again, technology can be used to get around it. So I've seen great examples of lab work being created through simulated environments using VR and AR, which I think has got a huge role to play going forward. But it's not easy, I have to say. And I think the other area which really needs careful thinking is around the work placement for students. So those kind of work placements now don't really exist given the pandemic. But I think it does allow the opportunity for more innovative and creative ways of giving students work-based learning,
mm-hmm.
And creating global opportunities for young people. So great examples would be young people now working for organizations in different parts of the world on projects, virtual projects, and actually getting their experience like the rest of us are having to do, work virtually, work to deadlines, and actually work for organizations and work with colleagues on through different time zones and different cultures. So I think we have to use it to our advantage and give students a different type of experience.
One of the things that you had written before was also along the same lines, but from the academics' point of view, that they could be taught by academics anywhere in the world. So you could get industry leaders, I don't know, someone working in Tesla talking to electrical engineering group of students. That type of thing seems to open doors now. I think that could be amazing.
I think so, but it needs universities to be brave and grow. I mean, obviously, there's a fear around opening up this kind of global model of teaching and learning. I think it would be great for universities to create partnerships with institutions around the world, so a student can get a module taught by a professor in China or America, or you know, there's nothing stopping the best academics and the best industry professionals to be brought into the classroom, the virtual classroom now, because time and distance really isn't really an issue anymore. We're able to navigate our way around it now. And for me, as a, you know, if when I talk to students, if I was a student, I want to, you know, doing business studies, for example, I'd want to know about, you know, the lessons learned from a successful CEO. I'd want to know about Elon Musk talking to me about entrepreneurship rather than somebody who's
can
never
you imagine though
yeah
that's that would be so inspiring, and I think it would really help
Set
them in the right direction.
And I also think that brings opportunities for different kinds of people, right? Like, you don't always have to have the Elon Musk, but you could have somebody that's quite similar. They don't all have to be Elon. I think there's a lot of opportunities.
There's only one Elon Musk.
We can't all share him, but there's so many inspiring stories out there. So I think that the university, that's a really good point, actually. And I think that's a really big takeaway as well for universities, that they should open up the virtual classroom to bring in those people from all over the world. Like, what is actually stopping them? Because academics do it, but I've never seen it on the teaching front.
And also alumni. I mean, if you're a university and you've got some alumni who have gone on to become successful in whatever field that may be.
It's even better, really.
Even better, because, you know, young people can identify that and say, he or she went to this university and look at them now. And that's inspiring.
They were just like me.
Absolutely.
And look what they've done.
Absolutely. But we don't see enough of that. We should do more. The sector needs to do more.
But what do you think in terms of, because you know COVID has brought some potential funding problems within the university space. Like, what do you think that they need to rethink their funding models? And if so, how could they do that?
I think it's really interesting because I think if you look at the, you know, there's this debate, the constant debate, cost versus value, the cost versus value proposition. And if you look at higher education, the cost of higher education over the last 40 years has risen by 1,400%.
Wow, that's incredible.
So, and if you look at what students are getting in return, it's pretty much the same as they were getting 30, 40 years ago. The experience hasn't really changed. And if you compare, I mean, if you look at the business model of a university, name me any industry or sector where the costs have gone up as, you know, exponentially at that level, and you'll struggle. There's a real challenge now because obviously students, I mean, looking at the UCAS data for this year, it seems very positive, but actually students have signed up for university. So that kind of concern that institutions have about students staying away this year hasn't really materialized.
My argument with that, though, is what was the alternative?
Right. I mean, that's absolutely right. I mean, you know, either get a job and it's the worst job market since the Great Depression, or typically students would take a gap year, but traveling around the world is now difficult. So you've got a year of basically sitting at home watching supermarket sweep. So
with your parents,
right, with your parents, with your parents. So it's not an attractive proposition, is it? So you think, okay, I'm going to go to university, and now we're seeing a plethora of universities now having to deal with COVID cases breaking out, mass breakouts. So how long is it going to last before students say, this is not really what I signed up for, and, you know, I'm just going to defer for a year? So, you know, there's all those challenges. And then the university business models have been built on tuition fees, overseas students coming, halls of residence, and obviously all the other service sectors that support that around catering, for example, and everything else. And also universities have been committed in many cases to huge infrastructure projects, you know, new buildings. Now, for me, the days of the 300 lecture hall experience are over. I mean, they're not going to happen anymore. Mm-hmm. And you can't see it happening again for quite a while. So they're not able to pack students in like they used to, in, you know, in terms of, you know, packing them in like, you know, sardines in a can.
So it's not a great experience.
It's not a great experience, is it? It's not at all, Stephen. You're right. Mm. But for them, it was good. It's cost effective. You know, you're getting 300 students into a lecture hall for an hour. That's good business model. Though that business model is now dead as of the pandemic. So universities, I think, are under increasing pressures around, you know, their infrastructure costs that they've signed up for, huge infrastructure costs. They've got huge costs now in terms of online provision. And people have to understand that high quality online provision is not cheap. You're talking about things like production value. The cost of a professor, whether it's doing a face-to-face lecture or online, is still the same, right? So that hasn't been stripped out. I think they're grappling with this. I think they're really grappling with the business model. And I think the top universities will always survive. They will always do well because they've got waiting lists and they've got a great brand and people want to go there. And actually, they're never going to be impacted. The second-tier universities, they might feel the pinch a bit because they're perhaps students are looking elsewhere now. They're looking at alternative opportunities for studying. But I think broadly speaking, they're okay. The universities are really going to struggle are those universities that perhaps are serving their communities, often, you know, within a space of 15, 20 miles, you often see four or five universities within a certain locality. I don't think they're going to survive. I think you're going to see rather than universities go out of business, I think we'll see mergers become a bit more common over the next couple of years.
Yeah. They've been doing that in Australia recently as well.
I've been through that too.
Yeah. I think we'll see more mergers, and I think we'll see some of the private universities around the world probably go out of business over the next few years as well. As students, to be honest with you, become more and more selective in where they study. So I think it's going to be a very difficult time for many universities in terms of their business model. And I think they need to be a bit more creative, and I think they need to think a bit more like certain sectors and take some lessons learned from other sectors in terms of how they've managed to reinvent themselves in terms of revenue streams. Mm-hmm. I don't have all the answers today, but I certainly see universities moving towards a more platform-based business model. Great example of that would be Facebook. I mean, Facebook is basically an advertising company, isn't it? It's not a communications company.
That's why I start off with my training. I do social media training, and I just tell everyone to think it's not free, it's advertising.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you are the customer.
Absolutely. So I think that's a different type of thing. I think it needs a different type of thinking. Universities have to evolve their thinking now and evolve their business models as well.
And I think that's an opportunity in itself to recreate themselves. It's the idea of them. I think that should scare them more, the idea of them not existing and losing all their foundations.
Easier said than done, though.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the concept of virtual campus then. What are your thoughts around that?
I think there's a lot of advantages to a virtual campus. I think, unfortunately, it's going to take a bit more thinking on behalf of universities to get there. What we're seeing right now is low-tech. Okay, Zoom, Teams being used, and we have to remember that's been an emergency response to a global pandemic. So what we shouldn't do really is base the future on where we are today. The future is going to be very different, and there are some great examples of virtual campuses, but there aren't that many. And I think that universities are going to have to invest an awful lot of money to create a really bespoke virtual campus for students that is really putting students at the heart of that virtual campus. The problem we've got with virtual campuses is building communities within these virtual campuses.
Yes.
I think what we've seen is it's really hard to do. If you look at the traditional university model, where do you build communities? You know, we know after a lecture, a group of you go away, grab a coffee or go down to student union and you build it organically. And trying to do it virtually is really challenging. And it does come back to earlier point about this blended model. I suspect that the future has to be focused on creating a high quality experience that creates the best of both worlds. The virtual campus obviously is around access, anytime, any place, anywhere. It's about cost, because once you've got the campus operational, you know, the costs are reduced in that respect. You know, it widens your reach, because you're able to, students from anywhere in the world are able to access it. I mean, a great example is Arizona State, which probably is the best when it comes to online learning. I think what they offer is unique, and I think they're superb at it. But even Arizona State have it that students have got to attend for a certain part of the semester, whether it be a week or 2 weeks. So it's not entirely online. And I suspect that's where we need to get to, really. I think we need to think about blended, and I think retail's gone that way as well. So a lot of retails have got, yes, online component, but they've also got the bricks and mortar model.
Mm-hmm.
So I think
the best of both worlds.
Best of both worlds. And I don't think we'll ever see a full transition from bricks to click in higher education, because I think that the data and evidence, all the evidence shows...
Click is so old-fashioned, it's tap now.
Absolutely. Sorry, yeah, tap. Sorry, Stephen. You're younger than me, so you're more up-to-date with...
Sorry for interrupting you, Cameron.
You're more up-to-date with the young people than I am, yeah. But... Yeah, no, I think that's where we're going to move to, blended.
Yeah, that's a really good point that you made, because we always make contrast to the retail sector.
We do.
Actually, throughout the weeks, don't we? So it's kind of reaffirmed.
I thought one of your points was really interesting about, you know, the organic way of having associations with friends and making friends, and it's difficult for universities to do it. But do you think there's an opportunity there where they could create like their own social platforms? Not really campuses, but platforms where students can organically talk to each other.
There is an opportunity. I mean, I've seen some universities starting to use tools like Yammer for students to connect, and you know, obviously, they have seen some platforms, and obviously, they encourage students to use, you know, the traditional platforms in terms of connecting internally, whether that be through Teams or Moodle or other kind of virtual learning environments. But I, on the whole, and I often put myself in the shoes of a learner, because I actually go back regularly to study at university. So, since I graduated in many years ago, I've been back several times. In fact, I've gone back this year and last year. And despite having great platforms, you know, the interaction is minimal, because
it's just not the same. It's just face to face.
It's just not the same. It's just not the same. It's very transactional in terms of the experience, and what we really have failed to do is build relationships and communities, which you know, I think is hard to replicate in an online environment. So I think there's a long way to go in terms of how we can think about navigating that and building virtual communities. I think it is possible,
but maybe the tech isn't quite there yet.
Yeah. I think so.
I think it just needs to be looked at from a different mindset rather than the transactional.
Yeah.
It's about really caring about that engagement.
I mean, absolutely. And a lot of the communities were built up around social events rather than classroom events.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think this year, you know, unfortunately, people who love sports, you know, I played in the university football team, and I made a lot of connections and contacts that way, or people playing rugby or whatever. And they haven't got that this year.
No.
So... the world's been turned upside down, and I think we're grappling with this. You know, how do we build communities in this context? And I think it's going to be an iterative process. It's not going to happen overnight. I think that we're just going to have to find our way I mean, even in Zoom classrooms, you'll see students with their cameras turned off. You know,
generally all of my students. So I do some gas lecturing. Pretty much all of them have their cameras turned off.
And it's really hard, isn't it, to build relationships with fellow students when you can't even see them. So we've got a long way to go.
I saw this really cool meme about students before when they wouldn't turn up to class. That was regarded as not turning up, so bunking. And now turning off your cam and turning off your mic means they're not really there. So it's the equivalent of bunking, literally. Yeah.
But not hopefully not really, but yeah.
Well, yeah, fingers crossed.
So Cameron, what advice would you give to universities to implement some real digital transformation?
I think we shouldn't talk about digital transformation on its own. What universities should do should have a long-term plan of where they see the university moving towards and their student mm-hmm. experience and integrate digital into their thinking and their strategy rather than mm-hmm. I see too many examples where universities will have a roadmap to the future and have digital almost parallel to it. Mm-hmm. It should be, you know, the thinking should be integrated, and I think it should be where do we want to be in over the next 5 to 10 years? What do we want our student experience to look like? What do we want our outcomes to look like? And then think about what technology can we use to help us and support us to achieve those outcomes. I think that universities should look at other industries and other sectors to see how they're using technology successfully. And learn from that. I think that they should spend more time talking to students about how they feel about their experience and staff. I think they should talk to staff and talk to them and talk to the faculty and give them, give them the respect that they deserve rather than it being an afterthought. I see too many universities who do a great disservice to both staff and students by launching initiatives and strategies without much consultation. And I think that's really unfair.
Consultation.
Yeah. And I think real, absolutely, Steve, real consultation and actually put themselves, university's management and leadership team should put themselves in the shoes of students and in the shoes of staff who are having mm-hmm. to deal with huge pressures, not just in terms of teaching, but expectations in terms of their research and students in terms of their experience in terms of what they're having to deal with on a day-to-day basis. And a lot of students are having to struggle with the fact that, you know, we're talking not just students but staff in terms of their well-being, mental health, lack of, you know, suffering with equity. A lot of young people are having to continue their studies with not great internet access or, you know, not mm-hmm. great conditions for studying in their home environment, or even students being quarantined. So I think now more than ever, universities need to show some empathy, mm-hmm. and I think they really need to think long term about how technology will become the great enabler for them to really impact on students and faculty and think about it that way rather than thinking about how are we going to use AI, how are we going to use blockchain. That's the wrong approach. Mm-hmm. Think about what are the problems we're trying to solve here rather than what is the technology we're going to use.
Brilliant. I think you've really picked apart this term digital transformation, which is definitely thrown around, but it's been brilliant to get your thoughts. Thank you so much. And you definitely are an expert. You have been
totally
before we started this episode.
You're way too kind, guys, but it's been a real pleasure. I've really enjoyed it. And look, technology will keep evolving and it will keep changing industries. Mm-hmm. I think the trick is to look at what's out there and look at its application and how it can best impact the students and the faculty, who are really the critical component of any institution. If we look at this pandemic, look, my final word, Stephen, here, look, this pandemic was the time where disruptive technology would step forward. This was the great mm-hmm. moment where we could talk about VR, AI, blockchain, but ultimately higher education has only survived through low-tech devices, low-tech application software. So we've really got to re-look at that and think, we haven't really grasped it. And what can we learn from this? And how can we best plot out our next few years by embracing technology and not using it as a kind of last resort. So I think that's how I would end it.
I think I'll use that for the audiogram. Okay. That sounded great.
Good stuff. But thank you so
much, Cameron.
Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it.
In next week's episode, we're joined by Nicole Goldstein from Facebook. We'll be discussing their move into education, their partnership with Coursera, and innovation in online delivery. If you like what you're hearing, it would mean a lot to us if you'd subscribe. Disrupting the Degree is brought to you by The Brand Education and Carnival Content.